Hello, and welcome to Teaching Together, the Complete Mathematics podcast. On the podcast, we talk through a single objective in detail in order to make our teaching of the chosen idea more impactful. I'm Dave Taylor, and today we're joined by Lead Practitioner, Secondary Math Specialist, and Math CPD chat host, Catherine Darwin.
Hello.
And my Complete Maths colleague, Johnny Hall.
Hello.
Catherine, what objective are we looking at today?
So we're looking at missing numbers and amounts.
This objective is from Unit 10 of Stage 6 of the Complete Mathematics curriculum. You can access this objective and the whole curriculum made up of 1,800 objectives at completemaths.com for free. You can follow along at home by heading to completemaths.com/podcasts to download the slide deck of tasks from today's episode. And once you've got this, let's dive into Teach, Do, Practice, Behave with missing numbers and amounts. Before we teach pupils a new idea, we must be sure that we're doing the right maths at the right level. If we're not and it's too easy, we run the risk of boring pupils. But if it's too hard, we run the risk of developing the idea that maths isn't for everyone, and we know that everyone can learn maths well. We can check that we're doing the right maths by assessing prerequisite knowledge. So Catherine, tell us how you might go about that in your classroom.
So for me, the biggest bit of prerequisite knowledge is making sure that students are really confident with using fractions in terms of writing those as divisors. So I would be looking at something like the task on slide 3, where I'm attempting to ask students to figure out what that multiplicative identity is. So trying to find ways that they can make a 1 by multiplying whole numbers or other fractions. And then looking at kind of a little bit more deeply at how things are affected when we've got things that are the same numerators and denominators, and kind of special cases like looking at zeros, like in the NCETM task, which is on the right-hand side.
So what I really like is the use of the multiplicative inverse for division. Johnny, I'm sure that you've got something to say here.
Yeah, I'm looking at that first one. I really like the The low floor, I guess. And then by the end, you're kind of almost working towards general cases. Like most kids, you'd hope 2 times a half is 1. You'd hope they could cope with that. Then that fact that you're basically working towards reciprocals and generalizations at the end is really quite nice. Never use this, but it does look nice.
So now that we've checked prerequisite knowledge and we know that pupils are ready to learn the new idea, we're ready to teach. In the teach phase, the idea is entirely novel to pupils, though only just beyond their current level of understanding. The teacher shares key facts and uses metaphor and model to explain and describe so that pupils can meaning make and form connections. So Catherine, for missing numbers and amounts, what models are we using here?
It's probably no surprise to anyone that knows me that ratio tables are my go-to for multiplicative reasoning.
What's a ratio table? I've never heard of one.
So in a ratio table, we'll be looking at kind of creating relationships both within and between amounts. But I actually kind of start this less in a kind of 2D kind of way and more a 1D. So asking students to look specifically between links between two numbers using multiplication and division only, starting with things that have got really clear factors and multiples involved, and then slowly kind of bringing it to a place where we would have to kind of go back and unitize. And then hopefully, based on what we've done earlier on to check the prerequisites, we can then link that into using our multiplicative inverse rather than division.
So we can use slide 4 with multiplication and division and then basically get rid of the and division part.
Yeah, so almost exactly the same slide. To be fair, I would just say with multiplication only as my second level, or I have that as my extension. Is there a way to do this with multiplication only?
So the task on slide 5, is that an extension of this? We're going to start making 100.
I think it depends on the class as to which one of these I'd go for. So this one is really nice as something a little bit more open-ended and kind of a little bit more in situ. It feels a little bit more playful, whereas if I want it kind of, I feel like my class needs a bit more direct instruction, I'd go for something on slide 4 instead.
So on slide 5, it's like one of those broken calculators just for those people that are maybe driving to work or something. Yeah, it's where you have some missing digits there and you have to try and make all the different numbers, but using just multiplication.
Yeah, I do like a broken calculator task. And I think you're right, Catherine. It does seem a bit more playful. So then we've got a task on slide 6, and that's from Don Stewart. Is that sort of a similar sort of like a continuation of what we've been doing?
Yeah, so this one's really kind of hammering home the idea of being able to do it with multiple steps. And again, it would just be a case of deciding based on the class whether 4, 5, or 6 are necessary or some combination of them all.
And then, I mean, I can see here that the Don Stewart tests do say multiplication or division. Are we going to sort of extend on that as well? Make that a bit harder by just saying using multiplication only?
Yeah, so again, it's a case of just kind of editing those slides as to what I think my students need. If they've done really, really well with the earlier task, it might be that I change it straight away and kind of put a little box over that, or it might be something that I put in as an extension.
Yeah. Whenever I do stuff like this, I always spend a bit of time, because kids, say you're going like from like 12 to 6, virtually every kid in the class will say divide by 2. I just spend a little time just making sure they're okay. You can just write it up as multiply by 1/2. Loads and loads of practice of that until eventually you're writing the whole thing just using multiplication sign and a fraction.
Part of the power of these ones as well is that there isn't only one way to do them. So starting to get the students to pull all of those ideas together, and then when you write them with their multiplicative inverses, you can start seeing that these are equivalent fractions that you're coming up with. So they can see that it's really the same maths that they're doing. They're just kind of taking different steps to get there.
So next, we'll transition out of the teach phase and we'll be looking for pupils to do. Now that we've talked about the teach phase, let's talk about do. In the do phase, pupils are simply replicating what they've been shown, and in most cases, this is likely to be a procedure which leads to a solution. The do phase complements the teach phase by allowing pupils to develop confidence and fluency in working with the new procedure. The teacher is responsive to pupils and lending their model or example to make stronger connections in pupil schema and maintaining pupil motivation. The aim of this stage is for pupils to be successful in replicating the novel idea, and it's important to state that meaningful learning hasn't yet occurred. Performance is indeed a poor proxy for learning. So this stage is all about replication. And how do we go about that then, Catherine?
So my favourite resource for this is Don Stewart's boxes. If you've not seen them before, it is just essentially a ratio table, but in a slightly different format. So we've got circles connected. So
you don't like the format, do you?
No, I don't. I'm a sucker for the actual box, but only because I think you can fit more information in it and then around it rather than on these lines. But the students still take to this really well, particularly if you've kind of had the earlier tasks where you're showing the connection between the numbers. From the earlier kind of Don Stewart tasks as well. So essentially this is just a point at where we're making it into 2D and we're linking kind of two ratios together, and they start really, really easily with something like 3 to 6 at the top and 3 to 9 down the side, and then trying to decide which way is the easiest way, either you're within or between multiplier. And sometimes one of them is lovely, sometimes the other is horrible, and sometimes they're both horrible as you go further and further through the tasks. And so the students kind of start freaking out because they've got to kind of deal with things like getting from 14 to 60 and they're not quite sure how to do it. And then reminding them they can do more than one step and using those multiplicative inverses is really important.
I don't go to decimals as well on the other side, which I think is a bit against the spirit of the thing, but like, I mean, who am I to argue with what Don wants? But like,
can't argue with King Don.
My favourite thing about ratio tables is the relationship between the diagonals. Is that something that you might bring in here, or is that something for later?
I particularly start bringing it in when we get to these ones that Johnny's just talked about the decimals. So thinking about, once we've done this sheet, seeing if we can spot any more patterns than just these kind of these ratios that simplify to give the same thing. So is there a way that we can find another relationship? And quite often there are a few students that spot it and really want to talk about it and share it. And then they bring it on to everybody else.
I think the diagonal product at this point for me is it kind of like a really interesting sort of like you wowie moment with the kids, but its real utilization comes on much later down the line when you're thinking like you're solving those equations with ratios in and stuff like that. And it's like where that cross multiplication has to happen. It's the same thing as what's going on in the ratio table.
Now there is another representation to do this with, isn't there, using number lines, and that's on slide 8. You mentioned unitizing earlier. Is this the unitizing approach?
Yeah, so one of the things I might do to scaffold this idea if students have struggled earlier on is to think about having multiple number lines and representing kind of the multiplicative relationship moving between them. It's almost a play on the double number line, but almost with the unitizing kind of in the center of it. And again, making it really explicit that we're not using dividing by seven, as you can see on slide number eight, to go from seven down to one, but instead we're saying we're multiplying by 1/7 and then building that up by then timesing by 10 to get to 10, and then pulling it all together to try and make the one fraction again. So it's kind of a bridge in between, I guess, the teach and the do for me.
And then on slide nine, what I've tried to do, I've tried to take the boxes and then turn that into more of a ratio table. And I think that here we can see them multiplying by fractions, single fractions a bit more simply. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think I much prefer the idea of having these tables because you can fit a little bit more on the outside in terms of those fractions and deal with it. Kind of, if you want to, you can even add extra little lines in the middle or at the end and work upwards and downwards and across in any way you like.
When I'm first doing ones like this, like on the screen now, I've got like a relationship between 6 and 8. And like whenever I'm doing these first ones, I always end up kind of almost drawing a double number line by basically saying, okay, what times tables 6 and 8 part of? And kids will generally say 2. So I'll write out the 2 times table, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So, and then I'll circle the 6 and I'll say, right, how am I going to get to that 8? And you've got to go backwards before you go forwards. So it's like divide by 3 to get back to 2, and then times by 4 to get to 8. And then that is where the times by 4/3 comes from. So I'm always kind of doing a double number line when I'm explaining how this ratio table works. And then we quickly drop the double number line and just work straight with the ratio table.
So throughout the last couple of slides, we've had pupils getting more fluent with the idea of these boxes and ratio tables. So by the end of it, we're hoping that they're just drawing a ratio table in their books.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, this is kind of the whole point. And then it gets utilized in lots of different contexts. But if we can crack this in at the beginning, then it makes everything else very easy.
So through teach and do, the pupils have developed fluency. And then we're going to segue into the practice phase. In the practice phase, pupils move beyond simply performing and begin to develop more flexible knowledge of the idea. Unfortunately, it's quite common that a maths lesson doesn't get this far. Pupils tend to perform with a new idea, but don't form connections between the novel idea and their existing schema, and this affects retention. Through teach and do, pupils are now fluent with the procedure for missing numbers and amounts, so are now directing their attention to underlying structures, relationships, and principles, bringing about strong connections with prior knowledge. Looking for a well-structured and intelligently designed task that will aid pupils in forming links with their existing schema. So what might we be using here?
So on slide 10, you can see a set of resources from Helen Constantine or Gifted HKO. She has put together a load of different contexts where you might be able to use this multiplicative reasoning idea. You can probably kind of imagine that a lot of us, in terms of teaching percentages, we've kind of done chunking before, which is for all intents and purposes like a multi-layered ratio table. So this just kind of makes that relationship a little bit more explicit. Then we've got a similar one which looks at solving equations or just manipulating equations by moving between kind of the variable side of it and then looking at kind of what they're equal to. And then looking at how they are affected by fractions, which is one of my kind of favorite bits of how a ratio table works. And again, if you want more detail on that, Don Stewart's boxes is probably the place to go. But my favorite line on that bottom one is the fractions line on the very, very bottom. It's asking you about things like what is twice the number when you know 2/3? What is 8 times the number when you know 4/5? So it's about going beyond really like thinking about going back to like a unit or to the original number, because that's actually not the easiest way to do those questions.
Yeah, I do really like the stuff that Helen puts together. Now, if you click on the image, it'll take you straight to Helen's blog where there are many other resources shared. And the same goes for the Don Stewart boxes. If you click on the images throughout the slide deck, you'll find that they take you to the pertinent website that you need. Now, I saw you present, Catherine, at MathsConf on ratio tables, and it became really apparent how important it is that pupils become fluent with ratio tables from quite an early age, because they're everywhere, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, these are just three examples of places where they appear, but compound measures is like my favorite place to put them in. I think that they're just incredibly powerful for that. You've got your best bias questions as your kind of standard proportional reasoning, but it's absolutely phenomenal how many questions, if you go through a kind of foundation GCSE paper, you'll find it in. I really like boggling my year 11's brains by going through a paper and kind of being like, this one's a table and this one's a table and this one's a table. It is one of my favorite things to do.
I was going to echo that. Yeah, it's quite a nice experiment to do, either with a department or something. Just take a foundation paper in particular and just see how many times you could answer the question using a ratio table. And you'll amaze yourself, because probably, what, maybe 50% of the paper, something like that, you can answer with a ratio table. It's such a large proportion of the curriculum.
I think what's also quite important is that it feels like this really only works with numbers, but if you kind of try and stick the algebra into these tables, you can actually create yourself the equations that they ask for in those algebraic proportion questions as well, and add columns for when things are proportional to x squared and so on and so on. So it is just a ridiculously powerful tool.
So after pupils have become more fluent and begin to form these strong connections where ratio tables can be used, we're going to look at them behaving mathematically, and that's coming up next. In order to develop mathematicians, this phase is the most important of all. We deepen understanding through behaving mathematically, and when behaving mathematically, maturation matters. Tests are chosen from well-embedded and mature ideas that connect to a novel idea. A good rule of thumb is that this kind of maturation takes 2 years, so we're looking for pupils to transition from specialising to conjecturing and generalising through to analysing and reasoning with the related idea from 2 stages previous. So for the objective that's called missing numbers and amounts, Johnny, is there a times tables grid test that you want to talk through?
Yes, probably a different one to this one as well, because I've recently discovered an even better one. But after introducing ratio tables to our kids, in our school, they all have a massive times table grid in their planner. So I'll get them to turn to that times table grid and say, oh, no, these ratio tables have just been messing up. Look at your times table grid and pick any 4 squares you want and you'll form a ratio table. And we'll look at things like the products of the diagonals again. And those multipliers that we've talked about. And it's like one of those, again, another little nice wow moment in maths that, okay, this times table thing that's been lurking in my planner for years is also yet another times table grid. But one thing I stumbled across myself just the other day, actually, was I was playing around with the diagonals of a times table grid. And to link it with prime factorization, I just thought to myself, okay, if you work out the product of the diagonal that runs from 1 to 100, so basically the product of all the square numbers, 1 times 4 times 9, which is obviously a ridiculously big number, it's something to the power of 13, then work out the opposite diagonal, which goes from 10 down to the other 10, those two products are going to have exactly this, they're going to be exactly the same, because it all is big one big ratio table. 1 times 100 is the same as 10 times 10, 4 times 81 is the same as 18 times 18, and so on. And you could also link it to prime factorizations. I've got this dream of doing a lesson in the future now, of getting the prime factor tiles out and actually just like making like almost a tally chart of 2s, 3s, 5s, 7s, all the primes, and just doing the tally of how many primes are in each diagonal. And the two tiles will be exactly the same. So although we can't work out the products, we know that they must have the same product. So I think it'll be a nice sort of like wrap-around tasks linking tally tables, prime factorization, ratio tables. So I'll let you know how it goes when I've tried it out.
I look forward to it. There was a test that you shared at a teaching together fairly recently, which was, it had a 100 grid on it and a times tables grid on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's what's the difference between the two, yeah.
Yeah, and this got me thinking. Those of us who are a bit longer in the tooth, I mean, I'm only 37, but when I started teaching, coursework was just on its way out. And this will remind people of the opposite corner's coursework task.
That was my coursework task. Sorry, Dave.
Except for it's not on a 100 grid, it's on a times tables grid. And then I started thinking, particularly when you share this task at teaching together in Leeds, opposite corners on a times tables grid and opposite corners on a 100 square, I kind of like the same thing, but the times tables grid is when they're being multiplied and a 100 square is when they're being added.
Makes perfect sense.
So what I've written down here is that 100 square is to adding, as a times tables grid is to multiplying.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that makes quite a bit of sense if we think about the fact we've been talking about multiplicative inverse, but we also talk about additive inverse. So it's just kind of another link between two parts of maths that are similar but slightly different operation.
And that's kind of what we're aiming for people to appreciate.
Yeah, appreciate the links and the connections. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, that's it for this episode of Teaching Together. Remember that you can check out the entire curriculum for free at CompleteMaths.com. That's over 1,800 objectives from counting to calculus. We hope that you've taken a lot from this episode, and if you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, don't hesitate to get in touch on Twitter. My handle is at TaylorDA01.
And mine's at Arithmetics.
And mine is at StudyMaths.
Or you can get in touch with Complete Maths on at LaSalleEd. We're also contactable on email. I'm dave@completemaths.com.
arithmetics@gmail.com.
And I'm johnny@completemaths.com.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your chosen podcast provider, and please feel free to pass the pod to both colleagues and friends so that we can all improve our
teaching together.
Until next time, take care.